This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Well, I'm with Randy Smith. You're in Pennsylvania right now, Randy, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
And you've been to Maryland this year. You've been to Indiana. Have you got to trap any in Pennsylvania very much?
No, not really. I ran a short stint of a coon line there in probably the end of November, mid to end of November, and run a few canine sets to catch a couple fox with the boys before I started into the season there early in October.
I bet since your boys are so low key,
yeah,
and so calm, I bet that's an experience going trapping with them.
Yeah, you have to hold them back. They'll bail right in there and try to grab a hold of the stuff.
Before we get into what you've done and maybe what you've learned and you going down to Louisiana and different things like that, I've got a letter here from a gentleman named Calvin. He's from Cleveland, Tennessee, which is only about an hour and a half from where I'm sitting right now. And he asked me to answer these questions on the radio show. So I thought since you're way smarter than me, I would give you a shot at them first.
Why, thank you.
It says, hello, Mr. Locklear, I have a small problem. I trap coons for sport. Something is getting into my trap, but I do not know what it is. The first question, here's what happened. I set a Victor 1.5 two-spring offset soft catch for the coon. Something pulled the 18-inch Wolf Fang anchor out of the ground and took my trap. What do you think that could be, Randy?
The stake wasn't set.
So...
And it goes to all the ground conditions I've ever been in with using a Wolf Fang that if you try to pull them back out, it'll snap the cable before the stake will come out. So usually what I find is that I need to drive that stake down in an extra 4 to 6 inches in order to get some travel for that stake to set. And I don't think guys allow that a lot of times.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, from trapping with you, you put it in on a, like I beat them straight down. You put them in on an angle, don't you, from memory?
Yes, yes.
What's the purpose of that? Why do you do that?
Well, when the coyote would completely set that, which means, you know, after time, they put more pressure on it than we do on that initial jerk, and you'll usually have 3-4 inches of cable sticking up out of the trap bed, and if I drive it in at an angle, I can get it to lay down easier underneath the trap than if it was sticking straight up and down.
See, I told you you're smarter than I was. Well, I kind of agree with that. I mean, you would have to be in some type of ground that you couldn't hardly walk on for that not to hold a coon or even a coyote.
Yes. Yeah, they as long as they're set properly, they're there to stay.
Okay, the second question is, I set another Victor 1.5, same trap, so it's a soft catch. Hammered in the anchor very deep. Something broke my quick link, small quick link, 225 pounds, and took another Victor 1.5. Now, you don't use quick clips on your traps, do you?
No.
Okay, now I can probably answer this. I do on when I'm running traps, I always do, because a lot of times I'm on control jobs and I'm going back. So if it's a really good place and it's within a year, I just set back to the stake. But I'm using the 1/4-inch quick links, which is probably bigger than what this gentleman was using. And I'm also now running a piece of tubing that barely fits over that clip, so I can lock that clip closed. So I can slide that piece of tubing down on the straight part that flops in on that quick clink, and then I can put it up, and it actually makes a locking mechanism. A student showed me that last year down in Texas that he was doing for Mississippi, and it was ingenious.
Yeah, that would. I did try them initially, you know, running them on coon traps, and a coon, the problem we would have here whenever I was using them is freezing weather, and it seemed if that quick link would get wet, and then it would, you know, it, under the right circumstance, would freeze open if the coon was pulling on it the right direction or whatever, and I would lose them. So that's why I abandoned using them. But I would think that you know, using that tubing would fix all those problems.
Now, how are you attaching your, are you into the, you're in the chains though, right? Not just cable.
Yeah.
You do the chains now.
I went to using chain on the stakes, and with a bulldog puller, I can pull all of them, and I just never was wild about leaving them in the ground, you know, once I had them set up. So that's what I went to, and it's working really well.
Well, that's cool. I've never used a stake. I mean, honestly, when we first designed those wolf fangs, they were for cable only, and chain never entered my mind. And luckily, since Freedom Brand's carrying them things now, they've actually made those where the chain will fit through there.
I see.
So, mm-hmm. You know, so it depends on where you get them on what you're going to get. But, and I don't know where you're getting yours, but if you get them from F&T or someone that gets them from Freedom Brands, they'll be set up to run. You can run the bigger stuff through there.
I see. So back to that boy's question, it must have been, I would think that it was a coon that maybe mud plugged that quick link open and it got away with it.
Okay. Well, see, you know, even when I've been using quick links on coyote traps that are staked, you know, back when I started that about the time that I did that video with Matt Jones, and when was that, like 7-8 years ago?
Yes.
And I've never had a problem on a stake trap. Never. But, you know, if he's running that off an extension cable, or I've seen some weird stuff where you give him a lot of chain and thick cover and it gets wrapped, and that quick link, the door will come open on a sapling, and then they'll work that thing around till it comes off. I have seen that a few times.
Yes. Well, I would recommend to this, I don't know if he's a young trapper or what, but if he's trapping coon, I would just switch gears completely and go with dog proof, and he'll be smiling probably more often.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the third question is, I set a Victor number 3 4 cold offset soft catch. So, and baited it for coon. Something fired the trap but was able to pull its foot out.
Well, welcome to trapping. I don't have a whole lot of experience with soft catch traps, but I have had guys tell me that they've witnessed, you know, coyotes there when pulling up, you know, power right out of them and all that, you know. So that can happen just about, you know, anything that you use, things happen.
Well, back when I was using soft catches here in the state of Tennessee, we weren't allowed to modify those. And so it was, you couldn't add 4 coils, you couldn't even put music wires on the trap, even though somehow mine came from the factory that way a few times. Uh-huh. But you weren't allowed to do anything whatsoever to them. And I saw 3 separate coyotes in front of me when I was live market trapping pull out. You know, and you talking about just heartbreaking.
Yes. Yep. So that could have been a deer that stepped in his trap. That could have been an animal that actually, you know, a canine that rolled in it and it snapped off, and it, you know, could be a multitude of things.
Well, see, most of the time when I see a snap trap, Randy, what I first think of is, was it a flat set where the lure bait is really close to the top of the ground? Was it a shallow dirt hole? Because a lot of times when I find snapped off traps, it's got belly or shoulder hair in it.
Yes.
You know, and people don't want to think that's happening, but that, and I don't care what bait or lure you use, it's going to happen.
Yes. Yep. Mostly canines, whatever you're using, they're more wanting to wear it than they are to eat it. So rolling response is common.
Yes, yeah. Well, those are the questions from Calvin from Cleveland, Tennessee. And I hope it helps you out, man. This is, you know, I get a lot of stuff like this. Most of the time they're not snail mailed to me, though, where someone took the time to write them out, their emails. And it's really hard to answer questions when you're doing it blind. You know, I'm missing coyotes. Why? Or yes. When a good friend of mine from Contanning Pennsylvania calls me about a month ago or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, and the coyotes aren't getting within 6 foot of his traps, and he wants to know why. Now, how in the world did you expect me to know that, Randy?
Well, that wasn't exactly the question.
Okay, what was the question?
Do you know any lure makers that will actually make coyotes work dirt holes in? That was the question.
What was my answer?
Not that you knew of.
Well, you can't make a coyote do anything.
No, you cannot. Nope. No, you can't. That's for sure. You can... Patience is about the only way to ask them to do anything.
Yes. That's especially the new trappers. That's what I'm finding out from a lot of these questions is... In our world, it moves so fast. You think that if you put a coyote set out there within 24, 48 hours, you can almost force that coyote to be in that trap. And that just isn't realistic.
You got it.
You know, that world and ours. Well, let's kind of go through your season about what you did. You went down to Maryland earlier. Was that the first trip you did?
Oh, I went out in the Midwest where I coyote trapped. The first trip I went out there about the end of October, and that was just kind of to get the joints lubed up and get ready for what I was hoping was going to be a long flock season in Maryland. So the trip to Indiana was outstanding. Dave and I caught 96 coyotes in 8 days.
Wow.
So that was very good. And the majority of those were caught in the first three or four checks, and then we had a bunch of rain that, you know, puts a coyote line, you know, in the disaster zone. But they were in the mood. The crops were 80% off, so the coyotes were being bounced around, and they were being displaced for the first time in their lives. The young ones were in a world they've never seen before, and that really constitutes for a successful coyote line.
So when you're running out there, are you still using pretty much the Charlie Robbins dirt hole set with the auger? Is that kind of your theme still?
Yep. I haven't found anything yet that worked any better for me, so that's mostly the set that I use all the time.
And you're going up to an area. Are you setting? I know there when you did your Wolf in the Corn Belt DVD, you actually caught a quad while you're out there. Four coyotes at a location. Are you still setting that heavy?
Or no. I mostly set two traps. In the short check draw that we're allowed here in the East. I think that gang setting is important, but I found that, you know, when you're on a short check time, that really two sets are sufficient. I think if you were in the further west where you had more liberal check laws, then gang, you know, four sets become, you know, more important to six to whatever, but that's my view on that. That trip there, we set four traps per location, and that was the one quad was the only thing over a double.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So,
well, it made sexy video anyway.
Yeah, it was cool. May never happen again, so it was really exciting to see that. But I've caught one other time, then I caught three red fox and a feral cat on a four setup. But it could make good things happen, but I found that I could move faster by just slamming in a couple sets at a location and moving on.
So what kind of, basically for guys that hadn't heard your other radio show, what is your basic, how would you describe how you pick location, and then kind of walk us through how you actually make your Charlie Robbins dirt hole set?
Location in open farm country is fairly easy, but anywhere that I've been in the country, after you've been out I have been. Picking location is just second nature. And one of the main things that guys get hung up on is, you know, is this a four-way intersection? Is this a dispersal location? And all those things are important, but, you know, reading sign is something that I think that it is not it's becoming a lost art, I think. I always ask guys whenever they're going and setting up an area or they're scouting or whatever, what are you seeing for sign? Because tracks and droppings and all that doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. So if you're in an area where you can read sign, if there's sign there, then you can catch the animal that you're after there. But picking the locations where I go in the Midwest is fairly easy because the properties, say, per square mile might be four different properties in there. Square mile is 630 or 60 acres, right around there. So a lot of them are in, say, 200-acre parcels. So on most all of those property lines, there will be a crop change, a hedgerow, and you normally out in the very middle of that square will be a rock pile and a pile where they've thrown old fence posts and old barbed wire and all that, and that's usually the hot spot right there. That and waterways. Now, I don't know if, you know, a lot of people may not know what a waterway is, but in order to control erosion in agricultural land, anywhere where there's a gully or a low spot will generally have a waterway leading through it. And the longer they are, it seems, the better they are. And I have the most success trapping the very top point where the waterway comes down to nothing.
Now, what you're referring to is when we were trapping in Maryland, when they had the fields cleared off,
yes,
all the gullies, those places had grass on them.
That's right, and that's where all the meadow voles and the field rats and the mice and everything, I believe that when they harvest the fields and till the ground, all the prey is, all of a sudden, really compacted in those waterways, because it's the last piece of ground in there that hasn't been tilled or harvested or whatever, and that's where everything moves to. So there's a high concentration of food right there, and many times I've seen two coyotes working those waterways, and one will be on one side of the waterway and one will be on the other, and they're constantly watching each other, and they push stuff out to each other that way. And if the one stops and he's interested in something, the other one is right spot on watching him close. And so what I found is that if it seems like whenever they hit the end of that waterway right there, they may, you know, putter around there a little bit longer than what they would be if they're just cruising the edges, if you catch what I'm saying there.
Right, yeah. That makes sense to me. We definitely caught fur at them.
Yeah, they're deadly. So those two type of spots are what I look for. Most all of them have that, you know, that type. But, you know, just looking at the contour of the land and looking for sign and looking for the grocery stores, if you can do that, you can catch predators.
That's simple enough. So what is, kind of walk through what your set is so people can kind of, because not, you know, to me and you, everybody should know what a Charlie Robbins dirt hole set is, because we've studied what O'Gorman did when he started what Charlie Robbins did.
Right.
But a lot of people, because of O'Gorman, is scared to death of being online, and all his DVD or his videos are still in VHS. A lot of the new guys don't really know who he is.
Yes. Well, Craig's he's the general of the coyote men out there. That's the way I look at it anyway. And when coyotes started showing up here in the East and I wanted to learn how to trap coyotes, I, you know, got hoof beats and his videos, and, you know, I've never looked back. So going to his Charlie Tommy Robbins style dirt hole is the way I make mine, I usually try to find an elevated spot, try to pick the highest spot, a hump. A lot of times where I'm coyote trapping, there will be from the wind carrying the dirt and from compaction with equipment. When you are along a hedgerow in farm country, that hedgerow will be elevated a foot. And I just drill a 4-inch hole with the gas-powered BT-45 steel auger that I use right into probably about halfway up. If it's, say, it's a 12-inch elevation, I go about 6 inches, drill that hole at about a 45, sometimes a 60, a little bit steeper. Just depends on what the ground's laying like. If it's more into the bank, I would go at more of a 45. If I'm setting in flatter country, I go at a 60-degree angle. So I drill that hole as deep as I can get it, which is never less than a foot. Try to get 2 feet. Then I start at the lip of that hole, and I dig a triangular-shaped trap bed, which the point of the triangle is at the lip of the hole. And I dig that down at the lip of the hole probably from 4 to 6 inches deep and bring it back probably 14 inches up to ground level towards me whenever I'm making a set to my knees, if that's explaining it clearly.
I think it is.
Okay. I leave a lip on that hole of about probably 2 inches, and the trap is then... The trap bed is at an angle then. It's tapering down towards the hole probably at a 30-degree angle. From nothing at my knees to going downward towards the hole, which creates the step-down type of approach to the hole. The trap bed is dug so that it's dish-shaped and that the base plate and all that is not touching ground, so to speak, just the outside perimeter of the trap is. I drive the stake down in the middle of that bowl. I use a wire screen pan cover on, whether it be, I use either Kurt Beauregard's KBD 5.5 or Bridger number 3. When I bed that trap, I start back towards my knees, and I'm pushing all my weight down on the jaws of that trap, and I'm pushing down and sliding it in towards that hole and when it lands in that cup, the jaws are slammed against those sidewalls about, whatever the lever distance is back from that lip, and the trap is almost bedded instantly, just like that.
I mean, when you're doing that though, Randy, you almost actually bring your knees off the ground. You're pushing down so hard.
I do. Yep. I just push it down and sliding the trap in, and I probably start with the trap about 6 inches back from where it's going to end up, and it just, I do a little bit of packing, but not very much. Then the trap is really solid at that point, and then I cover the trap with, depending on which trap I'm using, from an inch to an inch and a half of dirt. I cover them heavy. That eliminates a lot of problems with dug-up traps and sprung traps and a lot of problems. A lot of people don't cover the trap with enough dirt.
Now, say how much dirt you put over that again. I think that's important that a lot of guys don't do.
Yeah, it's at least an inch to an inch and a half of dirt over top of the trap. And then I guide, I set up a horizontal guide that's over the front lever. It's right beyond the pan, and then I put a vertical guide right at the dog, and that is not a real confining looking situation, but then using a large trap and using a wire screen pan cover, the pan ends up, it's about 9 inches from the lip of the hole there, and that's basically the set that I use for red fox or coyote, or a lot of bobcats in it, and
And but that is, that's pretty much the set you do just over and over and over again.
Yes.
And, but, yes. But you're not really setting, like if you go to one of these sections of ground, you're not putting in 40 or 50 traps. You're just putting in probably two or three locations and going to the next one.
Yeah, if it's a, say if it's a mild section, I'll usually set two traps on it. And, you know, unless there's obviously two very good locations and the sign is, you know, heavy enough to warrant it, then I'll set a couple locations. But the problem that I face here in the east so much is rain. So as I'm setting up, I'm trying to get in front of as many different families of coyotes as I can, or family groups of fox. Fox are more condensed than coyotes, but I'm trying to get in as many groups of animals as I can in a day's time. So that I do with putting a couple sets in and hitting and running type. Now, the problem with the rain that you can almost expect shortly after you get a line out is that if I would saturate a property with a lot of traps, then I've got a lot of traps to remake. Whereas sometimes if I'm running alone and we get a washout, I'll run back in and only remake one of them in order to try to have as many locations with a, you know, a working set as I possibly can. Now, the problem that a lot of guys get into is access to property. So that's all, you know, this is all relative to, you know, I'm a big believer in having a lot of property to cover. And sometimes it's not possible. So if it's not possible, then you need to set heavier in order to, you know, maximize your catch on the ground that you have access to. But I like to have lots of ground to get to. And in Craig Swiftbeat's book, one of the statements that was made in there that stuck with me through the years was when Craig was talking to George Good, one of his mentors, about you know, keeping the catch up on a coyote line and everything, which is always a challenge. George Good told Craig that, Craig, I have found that in order to keep my average up where I need it to be a successful coyote trapper, I need to be constantly on top of fresh, new family groups of coyotes. So, that's what I do.
So, from basically what you're saying, though, if I follow your line of logic, if you if you've got five farms and you go set them up and you just sit on them, you can expect your catch to go way down.
You can, and but you know, from comparing notes with you and with other good trappers that can try to get on the right, you know, type of dispersal. Or the right places where there are animals to keep coming in there, that after you go through that lull, that you'll start to pick them back up again. I just never am able to wait out that lull.
Well, that's because you remind me of an ADD trapper. I mean, if it ain't happening and happening now, you're looking for a different state.
Yes. Yep. I smell trouble a long ways off whenever it comes to trapping, and I try to stay as far away from it as I can. Yeah, now, getting back to my season here. So I came home, normally I would have trapped a couple weeks for coyotes, but I came home after a week because, number one, it really got wet. Number two, I was planning on, I was waiting till about mid-November to go to Maryland, so those fox were furred up good and trapping most of the season down there. It's only 3.5 hours from my house. And well, I got down there and found out in short order that the fox were not there like they were last year. I caught 350 last year, and I don't it was 20 some checks, so like, I'm not sure. 20, mid-20s checks that I put in down there. And in three checks, I had 15. And I run halfway through the third day, started pulling, and went back and run over the rest of the stuff that I ran in the morning and pulled it and come home. So that was a depressing reality check.
What do you think the reasoning is for that? Is anybody coming up with anything?
Nobody has said in particular. I've talked to Ron Leggett about it, and it's been the same way in the eastern counties there in PA, and where, you know, they normally, I have a student of mine that has become a good friend of mine, Joel Martin, and he can normally work in a full-time job, catch 200 to 250 red fox. And I don't think he hit 50 this year. They just weren't there. So I assumed that it was parvo, because parvo, with, I raised coon hounds here, and with bad experiences with parvo, you have healthy, wonderful looking litters of pups one day, and the next day they're dead. And if it would be mange or distemper or something like that, I think that people would have been seeing sick animals. Nobody's seen anything. All of a sudden, they were just gone. So, I mean, I don't know that to be a fact. That's just my guess.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. But no one, it doesn't seem like from the way people normally talk online, no one in that you know, magical North Virginia, Maryland, and Eastern Pennsylvania just had a kick butt season.
Yeah, I think Phil Brown he's catching a lot of fox. I don't know where he's operating at or what, but I have friends that are across the bay in Maryland towards the Eastern Shore there, and they said that there was foxes living under porches, and the housing developments and stuff were eaten up with red fox down there. So maybe whatever it was didn't cross that you know, that the bay area down there, and there's still red fox. I don't know that to be a fact. But,
okay.
Yeah. Yep. But it was a disheartening reality. So then I came home and regrouped a little bit, trapped a couple hundred coon, and went back out west there to trap coyotes for another week or two. And that's where the beginning of the conversation started about, you know, you making something that would make coyotes work sets in December.
Well, that, you know, that's I cringe normally in December, because from a lure maker point of view, coyotes just don't seem to care in certain parts of December, and no one has ever figured out a way to force them to do anything.
Yes, and if you, I think that I was snared two or three coyotes out of just about a half a dozen snares out there in that week and a half that I was there. So I should have had a lot more snares out and forgot about. I thought if I could run way more locations than what I normally do, that I could make up for it. But if you've ever coyote or fox trapped in December, and you're in where there's sand, like in the south, or if you get snow, it's a very humbling experience.
Almost as bad as those night vision cameras.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. Well, we you know, sometimes in life, it's just as important to learn what not to do than it is to learn what to do.
This is true, man. That is definitely true. So
yes.
Go ahead.
The one thing I was going to say is, I believe if I would have put the trap between 2 and 3 feet back from the lip of that hole, like where you would maybe say the edge of a catch circle would be, somewhere in there, anywhere in there, if I would have just buried a trap that far back from the hole, I would have had to have caught twice as many coyotes as I did.
Well, see, normally when I start seeing that, if I'm doing a control job, my set changes dramatically. One, yeah. I go into, if it's legal, like I've been snaring here, but I go into snares, if I can't use snares, if I'm somewhere like the state of Alabama where they don't let you use snares, I become a mafia set fanatic.
Yes.
And go ahead.
I would be, you know, I'd be all for switching gears if the animals are teaching you what to do. But to picture what you're into, where I was there, when I showed up, we had to use a mattock to break the ground to get the sets put in. There was about 4 to 6 inches of frost layer, you know, frozen ground, till you could get into, you know, where the ground was thawed.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, you go through and you put 300 coyote sets out, and then it just drops down into zero to single digits, like for the remainder of the trip. There is no trying to hide a trap from a coyote, like blend, you know, to try to sneak in on it. That's over.
That's true.
Yes, so I didn't really have a choice other than to just ride around and talk to myself and hope and pray that I would see one flopping around there, you know. I ended up with right around 50 in like a little over a week and had all the punishment I could take. I did catch about 50 coon and I think 9 red fox too while I was at it, but that was looking at a lot of traps a day.
Well, see, the reason I was bringing up the mafia set, because where I trap most of the time, that's more doable. Like where you're at in Pennsylvania, a lot of the time, except in the deep snow, because of the terrain so different. But when I see the video of you in Indiana, and you're looking at, 600-acre fields? I mean, they look massive.
Yes.
You know, there's no trails out in that.
No, there is no trails, and even, you know, trying to snare, but your only opportunity for a snare would be, say you would have two hedgerows that meet up together out in the middle there somewhere. Well, where the coyotes would be walking down one hedgerow and crossing through the other one, that's about your only opportunity for a snare right there. And we're only talking, you know, we're not talking a trail going through there through thick stuff. We're only talking just a 6 foot wide a swath of untilled ground. So snaring opportunities are limited also there.
Well, see, one thing I've learned that, and I say, I don't know if this is even applicable where you're at, but when coyotes don't want to get close to my sets, I go back to what I learned from, and you probably know the name of the video because I always get it wrong, but Craig had that video and it was called like tricks and tips for hard to catch coyotes or whatever that was.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
And he had one or two of them.
That's two of them, volume 1 and 2. Yes, sir. Okay. Yep. Go ahead.
What I've learned in December, if I'm going to keep catching, is I will set a set, like in those hedgerows from what I'm picturing. I may be way off here. But if I could get the set back in there 3 or 4 or 5 feet where there is either a coon trail or a deer trail or something, and then I would try the best I could blend that in 4 or 5 feet away from that set. And,
uh-huh.
And that way they're getting caught before they get into the circle mode of being around that set.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That would definitely, if I had workable ground, and I was, that's the problem, though, in December. I mean, that's why all the old-time wolfers and, you know, all the guys in the West that chased coyotes for a living, whenever they started into December, they started switching gears and they would be transferring over into snaring.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just don't cooperate. But if I had workable ground and I was somewhere in December and the coyotes didn't want to cooperate, that has got to be the deadliest way to catch them in a foothold, because after I had all those sets out, 300 and some sets out there, there come about a 2-inch snow. It didn't matter where I put a set in. I would be like, well, there isn't no tracks, you know, coming down the lane or whatever. There would be tracks at those sets. Those coyotes, they know that those traps are there. They must be able to wind that bait and everything from so far away that they knew there were tracks around 90% of those locations or better, and they were all in that circling, you know, 3 foot out mode, and it would not work those holes.
Well, me just knowing you, I bet you were fit to be tied.
Yeah. If I would have had another option, you know, option D or whatever, I would have went for it. But there was no option D. I was stuck. So, but it was so cold out there whenever I would go to skinning those coyotes, and blood would like hit the bumper of the truck or the side of the truck or whatever, the skinning pole, it was frozen pink, like fluorescent pink instantly. Oh, it was tough. It was really tough.
So you were still trying to skin them warm?
Always. Always, yep.
Well, I can tell you, you know, you learn something when you go with somebody else, no matter if they're, you know, if they got any type of experience at all, you can pick something up, is what I've learned. That's part of the reason I love doing the schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you learn as much as your students do, probably.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, just like we talked about, what not to do.
Like, why are you doing that and different things? But from you, what really changed me when I'm out doing my normal thing is, you know, I've since that time, I've hooked up the skinning rig on every vehicle I've had, and it has made my life so much more enjoyable not to have to come in when it's cold and wet and you're tired, and then you've got all this half-frozen fur and everything's cold. Skin it when you catch it.
You got it. Yeah, I read an article or a book or something from a fellow that said, thou shalt not skin in the daylight. Well, I'll tell you what, I beg to differ on that, because, you know, you just in what you end up with as far as your fur quality at the end of the season, from whacking them and stacking them in the back of the truck compared to just, you know, ripping their britches off whenever they're hot, is night and day, you know, piling animals up and the blood and the mess and the just the slippage and everything, all that combined is even way less reason to do it other than just spreading that workload out throughout the day. And the time that it takes to skin a warm animal is really, I mean, it just saves you tons of your season if you skin while you go.
And I think you're fresher when you go out the next morning. Because I mean,
oh, absolutely.
I don't know what book you're talking about, but I believe that for years. And, you know, I'd stay up to 1 o'clock in the morning putting up beaver. Well, I mean, it was like I was a frat kid after about a week. I couldn't function very well.
Yeah, yeah. It just it spreads that out. And also, okay, like even if you had, say, 20... you know, warm animals laying right there on the floor. Even when they're warm, you know, I may be able to skin a coyote in under 4 minutes, about 3.5 minutes if he's warm. But if I did 20 in a row that were warm, I couldn't, at the end of that pile, I wouldn't be doing them in 3.5 minutes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just times that by 4 if you're skinning cold stuff. So, by being fresh and just ripping into that devil and getting him skinned and then going on to the next spot, you're giving yourself a chance for a little bit of a break. I mean, you can work so much faster. You're not hauling carcasses out. You know, you don't have them piled up at the camp or at home, you know, for a mess to get rid of every 3 or 4 days. It changes the whole deal. And, I mean, how many times would you be like, well, man, I can... you know, I can set 3 more locations here, you know, before it gets dark or right after dark with a light. Whereas if you had animals piled in the truck, what would you say? The heck with setting more traps, I got to get to this stuff or I'm never going to get any sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's the only way to fly the way I look. I mean, whenever I pull into wherever I'm at, I, you know, pull that bin out there, sack up the fur, throw it in the freezer, throw some food down my gullet, and I'm going to bed.
Right. Well, you know, it's to me, it's always, see, I've got spoiled where I skin as I go for the most part. Well, mm-hmm. I'm running a shorter water line right now because of, you know, this reality of life in my world right now. The lures I've got to take so many hours a day to package orders. So I'm not getting to run the full line like I'm used to running.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not used to cold temperatures the way we're seeing. It was minus one here. You know,
yeah.
I can be in Georgia in 30 minutes. I mean, I'm south. So, you know, I went out and I ran lines, and that night before that temperature just got crazy cold, stuff moved, and I'm running in my Jeep, and in the back of my Jeep, I've got those big black boxes that I put animals in as I'm doing this line.
Mm-hmm.
So I get back home, and I realize I was in a serious situation.
Yes.
Because I had four beaver, two otter, a handful of muskrats, and some raccoons. Now, the raccoons were caught in the dog proof, so they were dry. But everything else had leaked enough water where I couldn't take anything out of that box for 4 days.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, holy, I mean, I didn't know if the best thing to do was to douse the whole box with hot water or what to do. I mean, I was like, well, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there's challenges that if you're like road trapping, you know, obviously, you know, you're not going to want to, you know, be skinning right along the road or whatever. But what I'll do a lot of times if I'm road trapping is I'll go so far until I know the stuff is still warm or whatever and say, well, it's time we find a place to skin and just pull off on a back road or something like that and get it done that way.
Yeah, well, that's what we do in Texas on our raccoons. We don't stop at every raccoon, but about 3 or 4 times a day. For one, it's hot. And then we'll just pull up under a shade tree somewhere or next to a windmill and jerk those off of there. But there again, in the evening, then down there, all we're doing is dealing with bobcats, which is not that difficult.
Uh-huh.
You know, it works. And even road trapping, by using the Jeep, and, you know, and there's challenges using the Jeep. There's no doubt. But because I carry that hitch thing on the back and I've got those black boxes, I can skin beaver on the back of that box.
Yes.
You know, and I can skin otter off the front of the thing. In most places, within 2 or 3 stops, there's a place to get out of visual to get it done. And it just...
Yep. It just... You just have to do it. And once you try it, you'll never go back. That's just the way I can't even imagine going back to pulling in somewhere and start throwing those animals out. You know, a lot of times I think guys, when they make a catch, they're so pumped up and they're excited, they want to go get after it to get another one, you know, and they just don't want to take the time right then to do it, and it's so worth doing. It's so worth doing that this whole show could have been dedicated completely to skinning as you go, and it would be well worth it.
Well, maybe we'll do that one of these days. Well, do you mind? You ran it, and you may not. If you don't want to go into this, Randy, just go next subject. I'll be fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
You ran into a situation in Indiana with a local trapper.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that? Because I mean, it's kind of goofy when you think about it, but people really do get their feelings hurt.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, this was the first year that I've run into anybody trapping, and you know, it's bound to happen. I mean, with the fur prices and everything, you know, the interest is up. But I had some coon stuff that I was running on the road there, and you can road trap out where I'm at there. And I had a guy pull up behind us and just flipped out, you know, about, you know, having a trap along the road. And I said, dude, if you want the coon, I mean, the guy was like ready to fight over somebody being in his territory, you know. And, you know, if there's anything to be learned from that, I mean, in the scheme of things, you know, the way I said it, that is like so ridiculous for trappers to be at odds with each other because, you know, they've got competition. Mm. You know, I mean, you know, it in the whole scheme of things, I hate it. The deer hunting thing, I hate all that, you know, that attitude like that, you know, if you're on my property, you're going to push a deer off of here. That I mean, all that to me is just a, it's just like a jealous, you know, pathetic way to think about it. You know, I mean, all sportsmen ought to be on the same page and be happy that, you know, you have somebody else in the rank that's out there trying to get it done also.
Absolutely. So you're next to close up and everything, your next adventure, and I cannot wait to hear the stories from this trip. You're going to Louisiana.
Yeah. Yep. I would already be there, but they still have their deer season going on, so they didn't want to deal with us because of the deer, so that's fine. So the end of the month, you know, I'm just in the process of getting the truck loaded and just went and picked up 4 dozen 330s and I'm going to borrow the rest of the stuff from you and other people, and I'm just going to go for it and see what happens.
Now, I don't mean this in a negative way whatsoever, but you're not like a dyed-in-the-wool water trapper, at least not that I've ever known.
No. Now, usually if I can't set something in, you know, lacrosse boots that come to the knee, I'm not setting it. But I am going to have a pair of hip boots in the truck. That'll make you happy, and I'll probably have them on most of the time. But
I guarantee you will.
Right. But, yeah, I think that, you know, I'm, the only thing that I'm fretting about is the beaver. I don't care about trapping beaver. I'm just not real wild about catching beaver. Well, I'm sure we're going to have plenty of them, but trying to go catch some otters and cats and stuff, and, you know, hearing those Shangri-La stories of yours finally got to me.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was talking to you, though, several times at night on the phone about it, and Cindy looks over at me, and she goes, "You're jealous." And I went, you know, because I'm not a very jealous type person, and I thought about that for a minute, and I go, yeah, I am. And just due to schedule and the stuff we've already got scheduled for Texas, there was no way to try to throw another trip in somewhere. And she was like, "Well, why don't you just go down for a week or two?" And let me tell you, I mean, it took every bit of restraint I had to not be down there with you. Because, I mean, Louisiana is amazing.
Yes. And, well, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
And you'll just be careful, like I said, you know, don't stick your hand underwater on conibears. You know, be looking out for snakes if it warms up.
Uh-huh.
And I can't wait to hear how you're going to handle 15 or 20 beaver a day sometimes.
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know. I'm taking a wild man with me, so we'll be all right. We'll be able to prop each other's heads up, you know, at the end of the day. We'll make it.
Well, you need to do like T.A. Duke did back in the fur boom, where he just had a guy he hired, and he was actually fleshing and skinning in the van going from stop to stop.
Wouldn't that be interesting, the way I drive? Yeah, well, I owe you the thanks. You got me hooked up with Chip in Mississippi, and it went from, you know, him following up on a lead from a friend of a friend to finally, you know, you've been around me before where I keep asking the same question until I get the answer that I want.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's a show unto itself.
Well, you know, if you really want to do something, you know, you can't, the first roadblock you come to, you can't say it ain't going to work.
I bet you were a terrorist as a kid.
I was actually a good kid. My mama will tell you that. You know, now my brothers weren't, but I was good.
Well, man, I'm gonna make the same offer I made to Brandon Johnson yesterday. You break my otter record of 121, and I'm paying for the biggest steak dinner you can find when we get around each other.
That'll be hard to do, but I'll try to.
Oh, I know you will. If there's a way, dude, you'll figure it out. I promise you.
Yeah, I hope so. But anyway, Clint, I want to tell you that it's an honor to be on the show here, and that this show that you do is really beneficial to trappers, and, you know, they don't have to pay a dime for it, and it's valuable information, and you try to seek out, you know, experienced guys to be on here, and and I just I'm flattered to be in that company.
Well, I mean, it'll make you feel good. I've had several requests. When's Randy coming back on? So I knew before you got down to Louisiana and got too busy, I better grab you.
Well, maybe we'll do it again when I get back.
Well, I can't wait to hear about Louisiana. I mean, to get you off of land in a swamp water, road tramping with animals that you're not really used to dealing with, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah, and then there'll be probably, you know, people stories. You know, you Southerners are a little bit different than us.
Yeah, we're right.
That's right.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
Well, thank you, Clint.
Thank you.
Here.
I ain't nothing but a simple man. They call me a redneck, a reckon that I am, but this thing's going on, make me mad down to the core. I have to work like a dog to make ends meet. There's crooked politicians and crime in the street, and I'm madder than hell, and I ain't gonna take it no more. We tell our kids to just say no, and then some panty-waist judge lets a drug dealer go. He slaps him on the wrist and he turns it back out on the town. But if I had my way with people selling dope, I'd take a big tall tree and a short piece of rope. I'd hang them up behind a little swing till the sun goes down. Well, you know what's wrong with the world today? People done gone, put their Bibles away. They're living by the law of the jungle, not the law of the land. Well, the good book says it, so I know it's the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You better watch where you go and remember where you've been. That's the way I see it, I'm a simple man. Now, I'm the kind of man wouldn't harm a mouse, but if I catch somebody breaking in my house, I got a 12-gauge shotgun waiting on the other side. So don't go pushing me against my will. I don't want to have to fight you, but a darn sure will. If you don't want trouble, then you better just pass me on. As far as I'm concerned, there ain't no excuse for the raping and the killing and the child abuse. I got a way to put an end to all that mess. You just take them rascals out in the swamp. I'll put them on their knees and tie them to a stump. Let the rattlers and the bugs and the alligators do the rest. Well, you know what's wrong with the world today. People done gone, put their Bibles away. By the law of the jungle, not the law of the land. Well, the good book says it, so I know it's the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You better watch where you go and remember where you've been. That's the way I see it, I'm a simple man. Watch where you go and remember where you've been. That's the way I see it, I'm a simple man.